Welcome to the Well Podcast. We hope that this message will help you grow in your faith and give you practical ways to strengthen your relationships. To find out more, visit thewell.ca. The first job that I had, a full-time job, coming out of school was, wait for it, I was the assistant brand manager on Shreddies. The Shreddy cereal. Maybe it was assistant to the brand manager. I don't know. I can't remember. But basically, I was in charge of trying to sell more of these wheat squares. Now, 50 years earlier than when I got that role, the brand was kind of new. And at that point, it was like, hey, there weren't many options in the cereal market. It's like, do you want puffs of rice? Or do you want flakes of corn? Or do you want squares of wheat? And okay, so we had 33% market share. But years later, as I'm trying to sell it, it's like, well, does it come with rainbow marshmallows? No. Is it protein infused? No. Is it a meal replacement? No. Is it gluten-free? It's wheat squares. No. You're right. People had this nostalgic attachment to Shreddies, but their sense of wanting to have that now in their everyday life didn't seem to make sense anymore. And then years later, I joined a volunteer team to help start a church, and it felt strangely familiar. Like, we're asking the questions, well, who's this church for, and do people still want a church? Do people still feel like there should be new churches? People, maybe many, had a nostalgic connection to a church back when they grew up or in their parents' or grandparents' day. And back then, you know, every town, every street corner had a church on it, and that's just what people did. They went to church on Sundays and went on with their daily life. But clearly, people weren't going to do that anymore. And so I was asking the same questions that I asked, in a sense, as a marketer, trying to market Shreddies. Is like, does this matter anymore? Who wants this now? Why would they choose it? And when you start a church, you're not trying to market something, but you are asking the same questions. And those were the questions we asked at the beginning. And quite frankly, 20 years later, as we turn the page on entering into our third decade as a church, we still need to be asking those questions. What is this about? Why be in a church? Why invite someone to church? Why be part of it? What is the church for? And that's the conversation that we are in. We started a couple weeks ago, and this is relevant for every one of us. If you're new and you might be wondering, yeah, well, what role could a church or any church or this church play in my life? Do I need this right now? Or is this just part of my grandparents' generation? If you're settling in and this is home for you, or this has been a part of your life maybe for 20 years, to ask ourselves, like, what does it mean to be the church today? Is this just something people have a nostalgic connection to, or that I have a nostalgic connection to? Well, what does it mean for us? Who's the well for in my life and your life and the people around us that we would want to know, to be able to explain to anyone in our lives that we would want to experience what we have experienced at this church? Now, I said to you last week that one of the pieces of advice that I got that I think is relevant, not just for me as a pastor, but for us as a church, is that a good pastor or a good church is meant to have the Bible in one hand and the newspaper in the other. In other words, our goal as people of faith is not only to know God, to know who God is and have a relationship with him, but to know our world and the people around us and ourselves and what's going on in our world and how does a life with God and in the church connect with the world around us. And as I look at the world around us, I see two pervasive major problems that we are facing as individuals in our communities and in our country and in our world that I think are universal problems. And even as I name them and explain them, you'll probably, if you're honest, if you're like me, you'll see them in your own life, you'll see them in the lives of the people around you and realize, oh yeah, this is not just a specific problem to a certain age group or a certain ethnic group or a certain country or people in time. The first one is this: insecurity. Insecurity is, I think it's the oldest symptom of what's wrong with us as the human race, or that we know something isn't right because of how pervasive insecurity is. Insecurity is just this feeling, our lifelong battle with shame that somehow we're not beautiful enough, we're not smart enough, we're not capable enough, we're not successful enough, we're not wealthy enough, we're not good enough. Insecurity says, I am not good enough. And even though I would say this is not a new problem, I think this is the biggest battle we have as being people, part of the human race. Social media has made this worse. Let's just say that, because we are constantly aware of how much more beautiful. I mean, you know, back when you grew up, you're just comparing your beauty to the person you went to school with who lived down the street. Now you're comparing yourself to the entire world. And we see, you know, beautiful pictures of all kinds of people. And it's like, oh, I'm not beautiful enough. Or we see the success stories of other people, from, you know, YouTube phenoms at the age of 8 to whatever person who started some new company or moved to some place and now has struck it rich or is able to go to this place or that place to afford these things. So I'm not capable enough. I'm not successful enough. I'm not financially stable or secure enough. This sense of not being good enough continues to grow and exponentially increase as we are aware of just how good or beautiful or successful we could be and aren't. And quite frankly, when we are posting those things, because we all contribute to it in some way, if you're posting anything on social media, we are thinking, oh, well, someone will think better of me as they see this picture, or they will, be caught up on, know what's going on in my life. But the reality is, what mostly it does is not make people think of you or whoever's posting. It makes them think of themselves and what they aren't doing, what they could be doing, or how they could be better, or how they'll never be like that. I think our age-old battle with shame and insecurity, this I'm not good enough, has gotten exponentially worse just because we are aware of all the things we aren't doing or could be. Like, honestly, we are chronically insecure. Like, every one of us listening to this, myself included, could make a list of at least 5 things of things that we feel like we're not doing good enough, we could be better at, we could feel like we're struggling at, or we feel like we'll never make it there. That's the first one I see everywhere, insecurity. The second one is kind of related to it, but maybe is more unique or especially potent for those of us living at this time in the Western world. And that is unhappiness, not just insecurity, but unhappiness, a discontentment with what we have, with where we are at in life. This is this sense of like, not all is as it should be. Derek Thompson, the senior editor of The Atlantic, I remember reading an article that he wrote years ago, talking about how philosophers and economists 80 to 100 years ago predicted that when we would get to this place in the way technology and finance and human progress was going, we would get to this place where we had achieved a kind of advancement and financial stability and security that will allow us to have so much more leisure and free time. And he said that's not true at all. Instead, what we have is what he called perma-FOMO. This awareness of all of the things we are missing out on and could be doing and should be doing. And so this relentless sense of needing to have more and get more, we can't shake it. In a sense, someone said it's the arrival fallacy, this idea that if we just get this, if we just get this, if I could just get this girlfriend, if I could just get married, if I could just get this job, or if I could just get into this school, if I could just achieve this level of savings in the bank account, if I could just get this promotion, then I'd feel satisfied. And every time we get there, we realize, oh, the emperor has no clothes. I thought this would make me feel content. I thought this would make me feel happy. I thought this would make me feel satisfied. And it does. For a week or a month or maybe even a year, and then there's something else, or the shine wears off, or something rusts or fades or becomes obsolete, and I need something more. The goalposts keep moving. This sense of discontentment with where I'm at is pervasive, as pervasive as insecurity. And I think like when the goalposts keep moving and the pursuit of happiness becomes the pursuit of pleasure, which is sometimes what we think, then pleasure actually doesn't lead us to, the pursuit of pleasure doesn't lead us to feeling satisfied, but in the end, addicted, as we need more and more to get less and less. Friends, these are two of, I think, the most pervasive problems that I see in my life and the people around me and the world around us. Insecurity, I'm not good enough. Unhappiness, life isn't good enough. And quite frankly, the solutions, like these aren't new things. If I say to you, you're not like shocked and like, I never thought about that. And like, no, that's there. The solutions that we get don't seem to work. this sense of insecurity of just kind of like, hey, well, just, you know, think better of yourself and you can do this. You got this. And don't worry about what other people think. That can work for a day or a week, but it doesn't seem to be potent and powerful enough to stop the sense of comparison and not feeling good enough. Partly because advertisers are spending gajillions of dollars over and over and over again to market to us, to remind us of what we could be better at. And of course, all of our friends and all of us are contributing to that on social media. It doesn't seem to work enough. And on the pursuit of happiness, again, the idea of just trying to be content, what we have, the goalposts keep moving. We're constantly aware of what we could have. The solutions of get more or want less just don't seem to work. And so the question is there a different solution? Something more powerful, something more effective to actually deal with these problems that we see in every part of our lives. I want to actually take us to a passage of scripture that does propose what I would call a very unlikely and unexpected, but incredibly powerful solution that really, in a sense, tell us, well, this is what the church is for. And if, I think the question is, hey, if these are the problems we're facing, can the church deal with those? Is this what the church is for? Like to address real problems in our lives that all of us see. I want you to listen to how the Apostle Paul, who the most prolific church planter of the first century in the Jesus movement, and all the letters he wrote to various church communities. Listen to what he says to one in particular. This is Philippians chapter 2, verses 3-8. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others. In your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Christ Jesus, who, being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing. By taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. Friends, the unlikely, unexpected, but incredibly powerful solution to our very pervasive problems of insecurity, this feeling that I'm not good enough, of unhappiness, that life is not good enough, is contained in this short section of scripture. It is humility. Humility. Now, you might say, like, that seems strange. How on earth does humility provide a solution for insecurity and unhappiness? I want you to stay with me for a few minutes because I want to explain that and why I think this does. And what does it mean for us as a church community and receiving a letter like this that very well could have and should have been written to us as well? First of all, I think we need to define, what do we mean by humility? Humility is not being self-deprecating, and you know, when someone compliments you or says, oh, you did a great job on the team. Oh no, it was the team, or oh, anyone would have done what I've done. That's not what humility is. It's good to be like that, but that's not humility. Nor is it like, oh no, you, I'll open the door for you. It's sort of politeness. I think the best definition, most working definition I've come across is from C.S. Lewis, the author of the Narnia Chronicles, and really one of the most wise philosophers of the 21st century. He said this: humility is not thinking less of yourself, but thinking of yourself less. Humility is not thinking less of yourself. It's not thinking badly about yourself. It's just thinking of yourself less. Like, in a sense, not frequently, not at all. How do I say this? And because that can sound like, oh, you know, you're not supposed to care for yourself. That's not what humility is. I don't think that's what he means. It's not about not caring for yourself. It's not about ignoring yourself and becoming a doormat or something like this. But think about it this way. Have you ever been doing something that you love, or in a conversation with someone that you love, or really enjoying yourself, and all of a sudden you looked at your phone or you looked at your watch, you're like, oh my gosh, I've totally lost track of time. You forgot about time for a moment as you were completely immersed in the conversation you were having, in the thing that you were doing, and the experience that you were a part of. You completely lost track of time. You forgot about time. That's what humility is, to have an experience, a conversation, an interaction, and a time when all of a sudden you realize, oh, I completely lost track of self. I haven't been thinking about me at all this whole last time. Friends, humility is when you lose track of self. Not don't care about yourself, not think about yourself at all, but this idea that you are captured by whatever is happening in front of you, that you lose track of self. And you think about this, this has to be the solution. This has to be the way where you actually think about like, oh, I've lost track of myself. It's not about thinking poorly about myself. It's just thinking less about myself in total. Think about this. The other solutions that we get for how we can get free from insecurity or get free from unhappiness all end up becoming about self in the end, right? If the solution to insecurity is, hey, think better about yourself, focus on yourself, you got this, who cares what anyone else says? In the end, it can just turn into a kind of narcissism where it is the self turned in on itself, where our solution for feeling bad about ourselves is just trying to hype ourselves to feel better and not care what anyone else says. In fact, prioritize our opinion of ourselves over what anybody else says. Now, is it good not to be addicted to what other people think of you? Yes. Is it good to have a good self-image? Yes. But ultimately, if that's the only solution, it becomes a self-centered solution in the end, which is of no service to anyone else. And what about the solution for decreasing or increasing your happiness? Arthur Brooks, in his book, Strength to Strength, and some of his involvement in the recent happiness project that was happening at Harvard over the last many years, he proposed this equation, and you'll see it there on the screen for you. This is super helpful. We actually went through it when we talked about our wealth series. He says, happiness equals what you have over what you want. Okay, so those of you that are happy to be done with math class, don't go into a fetal position here. I'm just going to quickly explain it. Happiness is what you have over what you want. And he said, one of the things we think is, oh, if I can have more, right, the top of the equation grows, then I will have more happiness. I will get more. I will acquire more. He said, the problem is, and what every study has shown us, quantifiably, statistically verified, is the more that you have, the more your wants grow as well. And in fact, the more you have, your wants grow faster than your haves. What that means is the more you have over time, the less happy you are. So he said, the way to do this is not to grow your haves, but to decrease your wants. And is that a good thing, to want a little bit less? Yes, but in the end, I think either increasing your haves or decreasing your wants ultimately is about you and trying for you to do better, just be more disciplined, kind of think less about it. The problem is that trying to not do something is never effective. Just not doing something will never actually work. Willpower will only take you so far. Humility is actually taking the focus off you altogether. You might be like, well, how, okay, humility, how do you do that? How do you forget about you? How do you lose track of self? You serve someone else. You lose track of self by serving someone else. In this passage, in verse 3, it says, in humility, do such and such, which sounds like it's describing kind of an attitude or a posture. And I suppose that's true in a sense that someone can have a humble attitude. But then actually he references Jesus in verse 7 and 8 as the example. He says, look at in verse 8, it says Jesus humbled himself. It's an action word. Jesus did something. He did humility. He didn't just have an attitude of humility. How did he do this? How did Jesus humble himself, verse 7 and 8? By becoming a servant and giving up his life for others. See, you can't become more humble. You can't forget about yourself by just trying to forget about yourself, trying to want less or hype yourself up. That's not how we forget about self. The way we forget about self is by serving someone else. And this word, this idea of serving, is actually what is meant by humility. And Jesus is given to us as the example. The surest way to forget about you is to focus on serving someone else. Look at it says in verse 3, in humility, value others above yourselves or ahead of yourselves. This doesn't mean you don't care about you. It doesn't mean you become a doormat. It doesn't mean self-care is out the window. What it means is the value, this idea of prioritizing, instead of prioritizing yourself and your needs above others, what if you prioritize others ahead of yourself? That is the posture of a servant. The way to forget about you is to serve someone else. And he says, this is exactly what Jesus has done for us. He gave up his life. He came to, and Jesus even said in one of the biographies, he said, I didn't come to be served, but to serve and to give my life up for you. Jesus adopted the posture of a life of service to us, for us. Friends, this is the gift of the church. This is what the church is for. It provides us an opportunity to become servants for each other. Is the church for you? Yes, the church is for you. The church is meant to be a place where you can receive, where you can know the love of God, where you can receive the forgiveness and grace of God, where you can receive the love and support and care of other people, where you can experience the incredible, exhilarating, supernatural encounter with the living God in worship. I mean, we had this amazing time of worship a couple of weeks ago on our anniversary that was kind of partly planned, partly unplanned. But that's for you. That's for you to have these spiritual encounters with God together. Is the church for you? Yes. But if you only make it about you, then church will never cure or heal your insecurity or your unhappiness. Because if you're always looking for, well, what do other people think about me? And this is just going to be another community where I compare myself to others. And how come they don't like me? Or I want to get their attention. Or I want to know how I feel about when I'm here. I need this place to make me feel better about myself. Or if you're constantly looking for those kind of, spiritual Red Bull experiences of like feeling that happiness and joy of being in the presence of God and others, it will stay there. If that's all you're doing, it will stay there for a little while and you go home and it'll be gone by Monday or Tuesday. Or you just try to come back for the next shot of spiritual adrenaline. If it's only about you, the church will never actually heal you and free you and I of our insecurity and our unhappiness. It's when the church, or what if the church became a place where we could actually learn to be servants, where we could begin to lose track of self because we are serving each other. And that's what I want to say. The well is for, not just for you, it's for each other, each for the other. The language that they use, that the writer uses here in Philippians, is one another, a back and forth, a reciprocating. I care for you as you care for me. I care for all of you as all of you care for me. And this is the incredible dynamic that happens in a community like this. The reason I can prioritize you is because I know everybody else is doing that for me. This is reciprocating. This is a community. The well is for each other. A place where we learn to become servants. When you adopt this posture over time, that yes, there's so many things I can receive for myself here that does actually heal my insecurities. I receive the grace and love of God through other people who are actually serving me. This is a place where I can find true happiness, not pleasure, but happiness and joy as I experience love and the presence of God. But over time, as I choose to prioritize you, as we choose to do that for each other, this becomes a community of servants where progressively all of us can forget ourselves a little bit, to lose track of self in order to prioritize one another. And this is why over and over, we invite you in many different ways to join one of our serve teams. This church was pretty much started by, we had one pastor. Everybody else who started this was serving in some capacity. And that has been a tradition and part of our DNA over these 20 years that has continued on. But the reason we invite you is not because, hey, you know, guys, the church is a volunteer organization and we all need to do our part. It's like, no, that's not it at all. We invite you to serve, to be part of a certain team so that you can lose track of self, so that you can be freed from insecurity and unhappiness in this place, that as you continue to get opportunities to serve other people, to prioritize others over yourselves. That's why we invite you to do that on various teams. Now, you know, we invite you to join one of our crew, our setup crew teams. What you forget about is your one extra hour of sleep on a Sunday in order to prioritize the needs of people who are coming. So you set up welcome signs so that people who are coming into a movie theater or into a community center or into a different kind of church, a place they've never been before, they see signs and they see people on the welcome team. You guys are there on the welcome team to welcome them so they know that we were expecting them. That if they have kids, and we know kids are a big part of what we do as a church, and of course, if you're coming to church for the first time, and so many of us had like boring experiences as kids growing up in church. So we realized, no, this is an amazing place for kids to enjoy themselves, and parents feel good about their kids being welcomed, and that there's registration tables and that there's kids' classrooms set up. If you're a part of serving with our kids, we invite you not because you're amazing and people will think, oh, you're an amazing teacher. And most of the people who work with our kids aren't necessarily teachers at all. What do kids want? What do kids feel drawn to? Someone who prioritizes them. They just want someone who listens to them, who gets on the floor and plays a game with them, who makes them feel valued and known and seen, that someone remembers their name. That's it. It's about letting go of ourselves, losing track of ourselves for that hour with our kids as we put them first. Friends, this is what all of our opportunities to serve are meant to do. And this is why we unapologetic. I feel no guilt at all in inviting. I know you all have busy lives. We all have busy lives. Inviting you to serve, because certainly that's something that has blessed my life long before I became a pastor. An opportunity and a place where you can get free from insecurity and unhappiness, where you can lose track of self as you serve someone else. Now, can you do this anywhere? Does it only have to be the church? No, you can serve anywhere. But let me make a case for you why serving at church is the beginning point, why the church is the best place to learn how to become a servant of others. First of all, you're in this community where everyone, that's why we're talking about this, everyone agrees that that's what we're here to do, that we are each here to prioritize the other. There's an each other dynamic that as I am prioritizing all of you are prioritizing me. That's how this works. And we all agree to do that in the church. Can I just say, not everybody in your work has agreed to do that. Not everybody in your school has agreed to do that. Not everybody in your extended family has agreed to do that, right? It's hard to convince them all to do that, and probably don't try. But in the church, we agree. Why? Because we follow the pattern of Jesus. This is what he's exactly saying. Hey, each of you in this community of Jesus, where Jesus is the head, where Jesus is the leader, where Jesus is the one we're following, then because we're following him, we all agree, this is how we're going to do this. We are going to follow his lead. We are going to be a servant to each other like he was to us. This is where we've all agreed to do that. And there's pretty much no other place that you'll find on earth that has agreed to do that. Secondly, I would say it's great. You know, you probably say, yeah, you know what? It's good to prioritize others, to forget myself and to lose track of self a little bit by serving others. But there's not many other places where you're going to have nearly as many opportunities to do that as here in a faith community. Another reason, which is one I've loved, is you get the opportunity to do things you serve that you can't or wouldn't get paid for outside the church. Like before I became the pastor of the church, I was part of the serve team as a worship leader. I sang and played guitar. Now, here's the thing. I'm not a professional singer, guitar player. Nobody would pay me to do this outside the church. Now, we have auditions so that, you know, I didn't want to be a train wreck, and we want people to be able to serve in the areas where they're gifted. But it was this beautiful opportunity to do something on a Sunday that I wasn't doing the rest of the week and that no one would pay me for. And yet I loved doing and loved being a part of. There are opportunities for those of you that don't work with kids. You get a chance to do that here, or that you maybe have to sit behind a desk all day and you're using your brain. And on Sunday you get to lift tables, or vice versa. Those of you that kind of lift and use your hands, you're in manual labor, you have opportunity to be on a prayer team. It's a very different kind of thing that you would do that maybe no one would pay you to be a professional prayer, but you get to do that as you serve on a team. Here's one of the biggest ones. As we learn, as you learn to forget yourself, to serve others, as you become more and more humble in the church, you begin to actually become more and more humble in the rest of your life. That this is the place where we think of ourselves less and less, where we're able to lose track of self more often in church. We learn to actually do that in our work, in our homes, in our communities, in our neighborhoods. And the people around us will love us for it. This is the funny thing. We all want to be around people like this, right? It's really hard. The chances are when you spend time with a truly humble person, you know how you know? Because you walk away feeling like $1 million. Because in that interaction, in that conversation, they were about you, not about them. They made you feel amazing. We all want to be around people like that. So as we learn to become people like that in a community, we are like that. It spills out into every other sphere of our lives. And maybe the last one, the most important one, is the scriptures say in other letters that Paul wrote that God gives his spirit, his strength, the spirit of Jesus, who was able to come and die for us and give up his life for us, to give up all the power and privilege and priority he had as the Son of God, to give it up for us, to live as a servant, to die as a servant. We get his power. That's what the Holy Spirit is the spirit of Jesus living in us to be able to do this, which otherwise would be impossible for us to do. This is what we get in the church. And it actually says that the Spirit gives us gifts to give away, that we are able to give away gifts like leadership, gifts like generosity, gifts like prayer, gifts like mercy, gifts like hospitality. The spiritual gifts that you'll read about sometimes in the scriptures, they're not gifts to you, they're gifts through you. The Holy Spirit gives you gifts to give away, and that happens in the church. I was thinking, man, here's what happens when we do this. This isn't just a particular character quality, a nuanced thing that Paul was calling out. Oh, see, Jesus did this. You should try to be a little bit more like Jesus. Friends, as we do this, we literally become new people and we become a new community. Think about it. As we, just like you can lose track of time, as we begin to lose track of self a little bit more, think about ourselves a little less, begin to prioritize others and be concerned with the health and enjoyment and blessing in life of other people, as we learn to give away the gifts that God has given us, we are progressively freed from this lifelong battle that we've all had with insecurity. We are more content in our spirits. We become a community where each is looking out for all, and all are cared for by each other. We become a community that gets healed of insecurity and discontentment, and we become that kind of community to the world. The quote here that I read for you in Philippians is actually, they think, from an ancient hymn, one of the earliest worship songs that they wrote about Jesus. This was a song they rehearsed about his life over and over and over again so that they would become a community that looked like him. Because what our world needs is not more of us. It needs more of Jesus. And as we become filled by his Spirit, have more of him looking like this, less of us, the world around us is blessed. And so here's what I want to leave you with as an encouragement. For some of you, it's just this: serve somewhere. There are many opportunities to join a serve team in our church. It doesn't matter if you're talented at it or you think, I'm not sure, that if you're joining the worship team, there are auditions, there's requirements for other, if you're going to work with our kids, you got to go through training, you got to be screened by the police. That's all part of providing a safe environment for our kids. There are things you need to do to prepare for that. But put yourself out there to serve. Just serve somewhere. You may say, I'm not really sure what my gifts are. Just start. I didn't really figure out what my spiritual gifts were until decades after serving. I just got involved. I had no idea I was going to be doing this. I just started somewhere. Say yes, serve somewhere. There are many opportunities to do that at each of our sites. And for those of us who are serving regularly, can I just remind you, you're serving someone. Maybe for some of us, especially if you've been serving at this church for a long time, you need to bring back the who. Not what am I doing in this role, but who am I serving? Because this is about the people that I'm prioritizing, that I'm valuing ahead of myself. What does it mean to realize, oh, I am serving someone as I do this? Friends, I know this is a hard thing for us to do. Our default is to insecurity and discontentment. It's hard for us to prioritize others. But as we get a chance to do this, we realize we become like the people we admire most. Right? People who are truly secure in themselves, people who are truly content with where they are in life and what they have, are the kind of people we want to be around. Right? Insecurity, discontentment, it's hard to be in a conversation with someone who's like that all the time. We don't want to be. We want to be around people who are secure and content. But as we do this hard thing of choosing to serve someone else and hopefully lose track of self a little bit more, we become like the people we all want to be around.